Hello, and welcome to Season 2 of Historically Speaking Podcast, Uncommon History with an Unconventional Pair. I'm Rebecca Robbins.
And I'm Kim Kimmel.
I'm a singer and actress.
And I'm a retired history teacher.
He was my history teacher in college.
And now we've been married for 22 years.
Sometimes quirky, sometimes obscure.
But this is the kind of history you actually want to remember.
Hello, and welcome to episode 45 of Historically Speaking Podcast.
We just keep moving along, huh?
Yep, plugging along. Mm-hmm. It's kind of fun that way, I think. So today we have, I think, a fascinating topic.
Yes.
I mean, I think most of our topics are fascinating, but that's just me.
Yes. Well, I would agree. I think that they are all interesting. Maybe a few are more interesting than others. But
yeah, I think there are a few that are more interesting to you than they would be to me.
Okay. Well, today we're going to deal with, originally I was going to deal just with Caligula, the Roman emperor, but I realized I had to really set him in his time and deal with the entire Julio-Claudian family that he was a part of. So putting Caligula in historical perspective and in his times and so on, by the time Caligula became emperor in 37 AD, Rome was about 800 years old.
Wow, is there anything in comparison to that?
Well, ancient Egypt lasted 3,000 some years, but Rome, traditionally, the traditional date for the founding of Rome was 753 BC. We don't know if it was exactly then, but it was about then. And at the beginning, Rome was just a tiny little city-state in central Italy, surrounded by lots of enemies. And for the first 250 years or so, it was ruled by a king, a rex, a very minor king, and so on. Legend said there were seven of them, which would work out about 42 years of reign. That's possible, but it might be stretching the truth a bit. We don't know very much about the earliest part of Rome. It's so lost in legend and myth. And then the monarchy was overthrown, and the Republic was established. And the Republic would last about 500 years.
The Republic of Rome.
Yes. The Republic in Rome would last, the traditional dates are 509 BC to 27 BC. And Rome went from being, in the early Republic, an Italian power, to, by the Middle Republic, becoming a world power throughout the Mediterranean. By the Late Republic, Rome was the most powerful entity in the Western world, but it was beginning to crumble from within because of corruption, powerful men who were more ambitious, who placed their own gain over the interests of the state.
Wait, how did they become so powerful? I guess not so quickly, but...
Well, it wasn't quickly at all. I mean, when you have someone like...
I mean, why Rome? Why not some other entity in Italy?
That's a good question. I mean, Rome was, in its early years, it was surrounded by all kinds of enemies up and down the Italian peninsula. Etruscans, Samnites, Equians, Volscians. I mean, it goes on and on. Gauls in the northern part of Italy, in Cisalpine Gaul. And Rome will eventually prevail over all of them. Like in the Middle Republic, as Rome is moving from being an Italian power to a huge power throughout the Mediterranean, it will fight 10 major wars and win all 10.
Wow.
There's just something truly astounding about Roman efficiency.
Do you think it's in the psyche of the people?
That's a good question. I mean, the Romans were very, very organized. Latin is a very organized language. When you study Latin, you can get a good feel for why they were able to run an empire. It's such a logical language, very complex and logical. But the Romans were great at many things. Engineering, they invented cement.
Wow.
And it's the best cement ever made. To this day, it can't be quite duplicated.
How is that possible with modern technology?
I know, with all the analysis we would have. But no, the Romans, when they built roads, they lasted. When they built aqueducts, they lasted. And the Romans looked upon war as a cruel necessity, as opposed to the ancient Greeks who loved war. But the Romans did it very well, and eventually they will take over all of Greece, Spain, Gaul, what would become France. Eventually they'll move in and take over southern Britain.
They even head up to Scotland?
That's right. They'll go as far as central Scotland, build the Antonine Wall above Hadrian's Wall. This would be after Caligula and the Julio-Claudians. And they'll take North Africa, they'll take Egypt, Cleopatra.
It's incredible.
Yeah, it's just amazing, the expansion that occurs over hundreds of years from this tiny city-state that began in central Italy and was very vulnerable. Well, Julius Caesar I think, understood that the Republic had to be replaced with something, but what he would have replaced it with, we'll never know because he was assassinated.
Right.
And then his great nephew, Octavian, will inherit his fortune and his legacy and all of that. Octavian is only 18 years old when his great uncle is assassinated.
And but, he didn't have anything to do with that.
Oh, no, 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 no. Actually, he was the... People didn't know very much about him. I mean, he was brought up in Illyria, and he was well-educated, but he didn't even function in Rome, and he came to Rome once his uncle was assassinated. No, he was very admiring of his great-uncle. Rome will fight three civil wars between 49 and 31 BC. The first civil war will be between Julius Caesar and his former ally, Pompey, who had actually married Caesar's daughter, Julia.
Oh, right.
And Julius Caesar will prevail over Pompey. Pompey was a great general, but Julius Caesar was arguably the greatest of all Roman generals. And he will prevail in the first civil war. Pompey will meet his demise. The second civil war is the assassins of Caesar versus Octavian, Mark Antony, who was a loyal follower of Caesar, and Marcus Lepidus. And they will prevail over the assassins of Caesar. The third civil war will be between Octavian and Mark Antony, who were formerly allies. Mark Antony will go off to Egypt. He'll marry Cleopatra.
Right.
And don't forget, before he married Cleopatra, he was married to Octavian's sister, Octavia. And so there was a personal grudge there and so on. And eventually Mark Antony and Octavian will fight the third civil war, and Octavian will prevail.
And why couldn't these two dudes just like fight it out in the Roman wrestling ring or something?
Well, I hadn't actually thought of it in those terms.
I mean, it would make a lot more sense than having to go out to full-scale war.
Well, Mark Antony had his troops loyal to him, and Octavian had his troops loyal to him. There was a third person named Lepidus, but he kind of disappeared and you know, just faded away. I think that the Roman Empire by the late 1st century BC, and I mean an empire in a territorial sense, not a political sense, was just those two men, Mark Antony and Octavian. The empire was still too small for both of them. Only one could prevail.
Right.
And Octavian prevailed, and he begins to get all kinds of titles, imperator, princeps, all these honorary titles. In 27 BC, he was given the title of Augustus, which traditionally was given to a distinguished Roman. It just meant to someone who was renowned, almost with a sacred or religious element and so on. And henceforth, he's generally known as Augustus, no longer as Octavian.
I see.
Right. And he'll get a lot of other titles. He'll achieve the title of Pontifex Maximus and so on.
Now, where does that fit in with Caesar Augustus?
Well, you mean Julius Caesar or with
Augustus? Well, because in the Bible, Caesar Augustus.
Right. In the Bible, Jesus is born when Augustus is emperor, and Jesus will be executed when the second emperor, Tiberius, is...
Now, where does that fit in with
all
this?
Well, that's what I'm about to get to.
Oh, good.
Okay. So, Augustus, I'm just going to call him Augustus now, okay?
Okay.
He is a very clever statesman. Not a great military leader, but he picked good military leaders.
He must have if he won.
Like Marcellus and Agrippa. Well, Agrippa will marry his only daughter. Augustus, by his second wife, had Julia, and Julia will marry Agrippa and have many children by her second husband. Augustus will marry a third time, Livia Drusilla, and Livia had previously been married and had two sons, Tiberius and Drusus.
This is getting very confusing.
Okay, well, I don't want to be too confusing. Anyway, Augustus has a long reign from 27 BC to 14 AD. He'll die in his late 70s.
Wow.
He's magnificent. He is a great
So we
ruler.
Like him. Thumbs up.
Well, he could be ruthless when he had to be. I mean, there were people that were killed. And yet he played games very well, political games. He deferred to the Senate. He made them feel like they counted. They really didn't, but he made them feel that way. He was very personable in his daily life, but he was the master, and everybody knew it. And after 500 years of the Republic, people realized they needed one person at the top of the greasy pole, and Augustus fit the bill there. And so you are the beginning of the empire in a political sense with an emperor.
Okay.
And he's the first emperor.
Gotcha.
Now, when he passes away in 14 AD, it is his stepson Tiberius who will become emperor. Tiberius really didn't want to become emperor. His mother, Livia, really wanted him to become emperor more than he did. He really loved soldiering, and he was a pretty good soldier. He was a gloomy, pessimistic kind of individual, very difficult to deal with at times. He didn't defer to the Senate the way Augustus did. He made a lot of enemies easily.
Well, didn't he have a brother?
He did have a brother, Drusus.
Why didn't he just hand over power to his brother?
Well, he felt obligated to Augustus to honor his memory. Augustus had appointed him finally as his successor. I think he felt duty-bound as a Roman to rule. And he would rule from 14 to 37 A.D.
Oh, so a good long time.
A good long time. As his reign goes on, he gets more and more tyrannical. He has a lot of people killed.
Seems to be a pattern here.
He hated Rome. So actually, in the last 10, 11 years of his life, he moved to the beautiful island of Capri off the coast of where Naples is and so on. And he would spend the rest of his life there. He was a bit of a bizarre individual in some ways, sexually, but he was capable as an administrator, and the empire continued to function, and it was vast.
Even without him being in Rome.
Even without him being in Rome. And what's interesting is that when Augustus became emperor, he established what was known as the Praetorian Guard. It's like the bodyguard of the emperor, okay? And then the head of the Praetorian Guard was the Praetorian Prefect. Well, Tiberius had Sejanus as the Praetorian Prefect. But eventually he became very suspicious of Sejanus and had him executed.
Oh.
And Macro was put in his place. Now, Tiberius will live to 79.
And he'll
die in 37 AD. And it's during, once again, Tiberius's reign that Jesus of Nazareth is crucified. Probably in 29 AD, but we don't know the exact year.
Okay.
And Tiberius appoints his great nephew, Caligula, whose real name was Gaius Julius Caesar Augustus Germanicus. How do you like that for a...
Okay, I'm trying to
Gaius Julius Caesar
that.
Augustus Germanicus. But he's come down in history as Caligula. And you might wonder why.
Why?
Well, his father, Germanicus, who was...
Why did he pick him?
Well, by the time Tiberius died, a lot of the Julio-Claudians, that's this entire dynasty that I'm referring to, and this the third one will be Caligula, many of them had died. Some had suggested that Livia, who was a master of poison, might have ensured that previous ones died so that her son, Augustus' stepson, Tiberius, would become emperor. We don't really know that for certain.
But it's a theory.
Right, it's a theory. But Caligula, who was the great-grandson of Augustus and the great-nephew of Tiberius, was selected by Tiberius to succeed, and he did in 37 AD. Now, the reason why he's known as Caligula is when he was a very young child, like 2 years old, 3 years old, 4 years old, he would visit his father, Germanicus, who was on campaign outside of Italy in various places. And Germanicus was a very capable soldier. And so Caligula, Gaius, that was his real name, Gaius, he would get in a little miniature military uniform, including miniature military boots.
Oh, my gosh.
And so the soldiers affectionately referred to him as Little Boots. Well, Little Boots in Latin is Caligula.
Oh.
And it is as Caligula, not as Gaius,
that he is best known.
Right. And so...
Now, he sounds like such a charming little kid.
Well, he seemed to be a charming little kid to some. He had brothers that all predeceased him. He had three sisters. His father was Germanicus. His mother was Antonia Minor. Antonia Minor was a daughter of Octavia, Augustus' sister, by Mark Antony.
Oof, okay.
Yes. Okay. And so...
I almost need a drawing to get this family tree.
I know. You know what's interesting is that so many times when you're studying ancient history or you're studying early European, early modern Europe or whatever, and a lot of other places in the world too, you can't really understand the history if you don't understand the genealogy of the ruling families.
Well, it's so complicated.
Right.
And intertwined.
Right. Very intertwined. And there were uncles marrying nieces, and there were people marrying first cousins, all within the Julio-Claudian family. Caligula, when he came to the throne in March of 37, for about the first 6 or 7 months, he actually was very popular. He reduced...
How old was he?
Let's see. Caligula would have been 24. He was born in 12 AD. He comes to the throne in 37. So he'd have been 24, 25 years old.
Okay.
I think 24. And he reduced some taxes. He allowed certain banned works to be published. He allowed certain people who had been exiled from Italy to come back. So for the first 6 or 7 months of Caligula's reign, he was okay. He was fine. He was kind of popular. Then he got terribly sick in October of 37, some 6-7 months after he became emperor. And when he came out, and he almost died, when he came out of that illness, he was a changed individual.
Do we know what that illness was?
We don't. It's a mystery what this illness was. We're not sure.
There's a lot of speculation about it.
Most historians will say, we really don't know, but he was a different person after that illness. And
sounds like something altered his brain.
Well, there's one of the suggestions was a brain tumor, which made him erratic and tyrannical.
But he wouldn't have recovered from that.
Well, it might have been benign. I don't know. There's different explanations for why he became erratic, but he became quite the tyrant. He had a lot of people killed. He did deranged things. For instance, he
was wanted, this a gradual or like pretty much as soon as he got back much, into the office, he started
once
going
after
nuts.
The 6-7 months in office, once he came out of this illness, it pretty much started right away.
Was he married at this point?
He married actually several times. His first wife died before he ever became emperor. So I think he's going to marry 4 times. But this is part of the derangement I was going to address. Because according to various writers like Seneca, Philo, later on Suetonius, and so on, he had incestuous relationships with his 3 sisters.
This was after he became emperor?
Yes, after he became emperor. Well, we don't know for a certainty, but yes, we think after he became emperor, especially with his sister Drusilla. We're not absolutely certain of this. Most suspected it, but this is all part of the mystery of Caligula. And then he does other bizarre things, like he had this horse of his. He loved this particular horse, so he decided to make it a consul or a senator. And in Robert Graves' work, he decided to make a senator he didn't like an equus, a horse. So he made a horse a senator. He made a senator a horse.
I guess that's an eye for an eye kind
right?
of thing.
It's just, he's bizarre. And he has these sexual events, these orgies that would go on for days and days. And
was this like throughout Rome or?
Well, it was in Rome and it was among the Roman aristocracy and among his family and so on. There's a movie made by Bob Guccione called Caligula. I think it was made in 79 or 1980. Peter O'Toole, John Gielgud, Malcolm McDowell. It's really bad.
Is it bad or is it truthful and ridiculous because of the topic?
Well, I think it'd be very difficult to...
Because you've got a lot of great actors there.
Right, and I think they were paid pretty well, but it's a terrible movie. I mean, I it's so bad that it gives sex a bad name.
How is that possible?
Well, it's almost unwatchable.
And you bring it up because...
For purely historical reasons and academic reasons, I forced myself to watch it, or at least portions of it. And it's very, very graphic.
Oh, speaking of orgies.
Yeah, it's really a porn film is what it is.
Oh, great.
Yeah. And so, you know, he continues to act erratically. He has his Praetorian prefect, Macro, killed.
Wait, Macro? I thought Macro was the...
Well, it's the one who took the place of Sejanus when Tiberius, and now he has Macro killed. And he was going to put a statue of himself in the temple at Jerusalem. And of course, as you know, the Jews are completely monotheistic. And he was actually talked out of that one. But that would have led to all kinds of problems with...
Was that just a whim?
He had lots of whims.
I think I'm going to put a statue of myself.
I can hardly keep up with his whims when you read some of the things that he did. And, of course, he made a lot of enemies.
I would think.
Right. And so, in January of 41 AD, he hadn't even been emperor for 4 years, he is killed by his Praetorian Guard.
Okay.
Right. And so he dies at the age of 28.
He's killed.
He's killed. He's assassinated.
I think
that people just got sick of him, and they couldn't. They didn't know who was going to be next, as far as who was going to be executed. One of the explanations for why he might have had incestuous relationships with one or more of his sisters is because there's a theory that he was trying to imitate the Hellenistic kingdoms of the East, the ones that existed after Alexander the Great's conquests, like the Seleucids and the Ptolemies in Egypt, Seleucids in Syria, and so on. And the Ptolemies emulated what the ancient Egyptians did. They married their sister. All right. And that's the way they would keep all in the family.
But Plagueon never officially married his sister.
No, he didn't. But
did they have offspring?
Not that I know of. He did have, when he was killed, his fourth wife was also killed and his daughter was killed. They didn't want it.
And he only had one daughter?
That I know of, yes. Uh-huh.
That's surprising. Well, after four marriages.
He might have had several bastards, that, with considering all the sexual activity that
he engaged in. Well, but still, with four marriages.
Yeah. No, I think his first wife died in 33 before he became emperor, and then by the time he was killed, he was on his fourth wife.
So did he do anything redeeming at all for Rome?
Not really that much. Maybe in that first 6 months of his reign, but he did other stuff. He marched the Romans, legions up to the shores of northern Gaul, looking across the English Channel. Of course, it wasn't called the English Channel then, the Britain. He was thinking of invading Britain, but then instead, according to some sources, he had his Roman soldiers pick up seashells.
Oh.
So I'm just telling you, there's just one bizarre story after another about Caligula. I mean, I think he was insane.
Well, that sounds pretty harmless.
Well, but it's just all part of the ridiculousness and excessive aspects of this guy. I mean, it's just...
So what's probably the one worst thing that he did?
The worst thing
that
he did?
If you had to just pick one thing.
I would say probably what was likely to be his incestuous relationships with his sisters.
Well, aside from that, I mean, something that affected all of Rome negatively.
Oh, he had a lot of very important people killed. And Mauritania was...
Members of the Senate?
Oh, yeah.
Mauritania
was a client kingdom when he came to the throne. And he had the king of Mauritania come to Rome and he had him executed. And then he took over Mauritania.
I mean, that's not that unusual for that time.
Well, in any case, when Caligula was assassinated, the Praetorian Guard, which is now very powerful, and they will play a role in many reigns to come with respect to who was chosen as emperor and so on, the Praetorian Guard picked out his uncle, Claudius, to succeed him.
They picked him.
He was actually hiding behind a curtain or something. Caligula had killed many of his relatives. He let Claudius live because Claudius played the fool, and he kind of enjoyed that. But Claudius was actually quite astute. He knew Etruscan. He wrote historical works. So he fooled his nephew. By the way, Caligula, by the time he died, he thought he was divine.
Hmm.
Yeah. So they made Claudius... who apparently had a stutter as well as a limp, and he, you know, Claudius. And Derek Jacobi plays him brilliantly in the 1970s in the BBC series, I, Claudius, which is based on Robert Graves' work. So Claudius becomes the fourth emperor. Claudius is a pretty good emperor. Yeah, he's a good administrator. He was deeply in love with his wife, Messalina, but Messalina messed around.
Messalina messed around.
Right. Mm. And so she gave him two children, Octavia and Britannicus. And so she had to be killed.
Oh.
Yes.
That's unfortunate.
And his son Britannicus was named that because it was Claudius in 43 AD who began the conquest of Britain, the successful conquest of southern Britain. Oh. Julius Caesar had gone over 100 years before. Julius Caesar had made two short trips over to Britain just to take a look. But he thought his lines were overextended, so he didn't try to conquer Britain as he had Gaul. And then Caligula had thought about it and so on, but it would be Claudius who would conquer Britain. And this is the beginning of the Roman occupation of Britain, which they would make into another province, Britannia. And Colchester would be the capital there. It would be a small town that would eventually grow into a very big city founded by the Romans, Londinium. I always like what Samuel...
You mean modern-day London.
Right, modern-day London. I always like what Samuel Johnson said about London. He said, when a person is tired of London, they're tired of life.
Well, you could say that about any big city.
Well, London is extra special for many individuals. It was for Samuel Johnson, but I digress. That's the 18th century.
Yes, that's...
Yeah, this is probably Claudius' greatest achievement, the conquest of Britain, southern Britain. The Romans conquered a lot of areas, but they never conquered northern Scotland. The Picts were up there, the painted people, the Picti, and they would go into battle naked, covered with all kinds of paint. And I think the Romans took a look at them and said, I don't think we need to go any further. So future emperors Hadrian would build Hadrian's Wall, which is still very much intact. And then the emperor who came after him, Antoninus Pius, would build the Antonine Wall. So Claudius actually married his niece.
Oh.
Yes, Agrippina Minor, who was Caligula's sister.
Oh boy, this is complicated.
Yeah, yes,
okay.
And she had previously been married, and her son was Nero.
Oh my word.
And Claudius was prevailed upon by his niece, now his wife, to name Nero as his successor and not his own son, Britannicus.
Big mistake.
Well, he may have had second thoughts about that. We're almost certain that Agrippina poisoned Claudius. We even know how she did it, with poisoned mushrooms.
Really?
Yes. In the series by Robert Graves, Claudius willingly eats the mushroom because he's so disgusted with Roman life and with life in general and all the intrigues at the court and the perversions and so on. But we don't know that for certain.
Was she ever brought up on charges or prosecuted? Or?
Well, when her son, he'll be the fifth and final Julio-Claudian Nero. He will come to the throne in 54. He's only 16 years old when he comes to the throne, and he'll reign for 14 years until 68 AD.
Was he the worst, do you think?
That's a good one. Who's worse, Caligula or Nero?
I mean, it's a tough choice.
Agrippina Minor would eventually be killed by her son, Nero. He would have her executed.
Oh.
Yes.
And for what reason?
I thought that she was conspiring against him. And he was also, Nero, in the first part of his reign, from 54 to about 62, was okay. And that's because he had some wise counselors like Burrus, who was the Praetorian prefect, and Seneca, and so on. But in the last 6 years of his reign or something, oh, wow, he just, I mean, he pulled a Caligula.
Maybe there was something genetic here.
Well, look at all the intermarriage. You're asking for it when you have that.
Well, that's true.
And a very interesting event occurred in Nero's reign. In 64 AD, there was the Great Fire of Rome.
Oh, this is the legendary, he fiddled while Rome burned.
While Rome burned and so on. And then there were suggestions that he deliberately set the fire so that he could rebuild Rome even more magnificently than Augustus did. Augustus said, I found Rome brick and I left it marble. And he wanted to outdo Augustus, but we don't know. That's just a theory. But what's interesting about the Great Fire of Rome is who the fire was really blamed on. It was blamed on a group of religious people known as the Christians. This is really the first time that you have a reference to this new sect of Christianity. And they were blamed for the fire. And they almost certainly didn't do it. They were a scapegoat. And this was the first persecution of Christians under Nero in 64 AD. They were blamed for the Great Fire of Rome.
What happened to them?
Oh, they were executed. They were put in the arena. They were eaten by lions.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
How many do we know?
I don't know that. I don't know exactly how many, but they were blamed. And it's really the first time that the Christians come to the attention of the Roman world at large. Until that time, they were increasing, but they weren't that well known. But the being blamed for the Great Fire of Rome really brought them to the attention.
I'm just curious, though, why would he pick, if they're not that well known, why would he...
I don't know the reason why he picked the Christians. Maybe he was annoyed by a few that he met, or he was advised to do it, or maybe they were beginning to increase. Because by the time you get to 64 AD, Jesus would have been crucified some 35 years before. So you're into the second generation of Christians by this time.
So about how many would there be, do you think?
That's a good question. I don't know. In 64, there wouldn't have been that many.
Like hundreds?
Oh, thousands.
Thousands.
Oh, yeah, thousands. By the time Constantine will become emperor in 306 AD, probably 20% of the empire, the entire empire, was Christian.
Oh.
Yeah, but that's 250 years
after. And this is Italy.
Oh, no, all through the empire, everywhere.
All through the Roman Empire.
Yeah, in Greece, in Syria, in Italy, in North Africa, in Egypt. So
20%.
Everywhere. And that's a huge amount. That's a large minority. Could have been even more than that. But Nero will be the fifth and last of the Julio-Claudians.
And what was his fate?
They finally turned against him and he committed suicide.
He was forced to commit suicide?
I think that he knew
like
that,
in a Jeffrey Epstein kind of committed suicide.
No, way. I don't think it was shady that way. It was, in fact, I'm certain it wasn't. He was only 30 years old. He committed suicide. He had alienated everyone, like Caligula had.
So he knew his days were numbered and he would be murdered by the Praetorian Guard.
Right.
So he escaped the hangman in a way.
Well, he did. He escaped the hangman in a way. Yeah, had to commit suicide. A lot of people had to commit suicide.
That's weird. They had to commit suicide.
Right. I mean, if you look at the Julio-Claudian dynasty, it's going to last from 27 BC to 68 AD. It produces one great emperor, the first one, Augustus. It produces two emperors that are capable, Tiberius and Claudius, and it produces two total whack jobs, Caligula and Nero. And wow. And then the dynasty just dies out with Nero, and you're going to have civil war for about a year, and then a new dynasty will come into power in 69 AD with Vespasian.
What dynasty is that?
That's the Flavian dynasty, and it would be Vespasian, followed by his son Titus, followed by his son Domitian. So it would be a father and two sons that would make up the second dynasty. And then after that, you're going to have the five good emperors. But I think I'm getting ahead of myself.
You're getting way ahead of yourself.
Right. Well, I've always enjoyed Roman history as I've enjoyed the study of Latin. The Romans were amazing in many ways. They didn't have the originality that the ancient Greeks did. I think they knew that. But I don't think it's correct to say that Greece had the brains and Rome the drains. I think that is a simplistic assessment.
I would agree.
And
with
the Romans, their legacy is tremendous. Their legal system is one of the most enlightened legal systems that exists at any time in history, and still is the basis of many countries' legal system. They were great engineers. They were superb militarily, so they had many features that were admirable. But they could be ruthless. But the empire will last in the West until 476 A.D. And it will continue the eastern half for another 1,000 years, the Byzantine Empire, which would not fall until the Ottomans took Constantinople in 1453.
Right.
Right. And Edward Gibbon, the great 18th century historian, wrote, The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. And he covers all of this. And he really starts in the 2nd century A.D. and goes on. I think it's 1.25 million, or 250,000 words.
That's a lot.
It's like 7 fat volumes. If you get the unabridged edition.
Yeah, I don't think I'll be reading that anytime
soon. You sure you don't
soon.
Want that for a present?
There's no holidays coming up, so I think I'm good.
Oh, I can get it for you for Christmas.
I'll think about it.
Okay, all right. So there you have it.
The Julio-Claudians.
The Julio-Claudians, 5 emperors, from Augustus to Nero, and Caligula comes right in the middle, and he's bizarre.
There you go. Well, moving right along, do we know what's coming up next?
I don't know. What is coming up next? We were talking about a number of subjects.
Yeah, we had a lot of great ideas.
I know.
But I don't think we actually settled on one.
I don't think we did.
For the next
episode. For our 46th episode, I'm not sure what we're going to be doing.
Ooh, it's going to be a surprise.
Oh, it's a surprise episode.
That's exciting.
Okay. All right.
Oh, we better make it good now.
Okay, better.
All right, then.
I think we're done.
Until next time.
Yep.
Yeah. So sweet dreams about Caligula and Nero.
I think sweet dreams and Caligula don't go together.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
No. Uh-uh.
All right, well, everyone, thank you for listening and sharing this time with us. And until next time, stay well and stay safe.
Goodbye.
Well, friends, here we are at the end of the podcast. Be sure to check out the links in the show description to find some of the resources we used for this episode. Also, if you've enjoyed listening, please head over to Apple Podcasts and give us a virtual high five by leaving us a 5-star review. We'd really appreciate that. And if you'd like to connect with us directly, you can find us at historicallyspeakingpodcast.com or follow us on Instagram at historicallyspeakingpodcast. That's it for today. And again, thanks for sharing part of your day with us. And remember, if you want to know what the future holds, study the past.